What is going on, Kickback family? Happy Wednesday. It's Dom. It's Gavin. It feels like fall. It's just about there. I'm happy to be here. That's all I could say. How are you, man? Talk to the people.
I'm tired, ladies and gentlemen. I'm good. Listen, it's always good to be on the Kickback program. Let me tell you something, Dom. The reason I'm tired, and you know this very well, I was on campus on Monday from 11:40 to, let's say, 7 o'clock, because that's when I saw you. And then yesterday from 7:45 in the morning to 5. I'm exhausted. I'm physically tired. But, hey, we're still here. We're still kicking it. It's fall, right? No, it's going to be 77 tomorrow. So,
yeah. But you know what, though? I'll say this. I know we're not meteorologists here. I know this is not a weather channel.
You can be a meteorologist. All you got to do is say something. It's a 50-50 shot.
Hey, man. I'm just trying to call for what it is, but you know, I'm just glad that, and knock on wood, this is looking like the first September in a while where we don't have any summer weather still lingering upon us. Like, we haven't had like a 90 degree day, you know, we haven't had one of the, you know, a heat missile. It's been pretty good for the most part so far. I'm hoping we have an early fall, because you know, this is my time of year, man. And I know for you, it's hoodie season.
This is when the rides return, and this is also, too, when hoodie weather – let me tell you something, dude. You know the hardest part about this time of year? You either dress for one – like, if you're a person who doesn't stay on campus, you're either dressing for one half of the day and sleeping through the other half of the day. Yesterday, I had a jacket on for the morning half and was kind of sweating in the second half. And now, tomorrow, it looks like it's going to be a hot afternoon, but a cold morning. What the hell do I do? I don't know. Pick one, stay with one. But, Dom, you're right. It is absolutely a great time of year. Football is back. The NBA is around the corner. Baseball is winding down. And also, too, hockey is making a return. But before we get into all that, week one happened, Dom. Take it away.
Yeah, so we talked about the Eagles aplenty on Friday. But Friday night, the LA Chargers get off to a 1-0 start, beating the Chiefs. Justin Herbert ends the game. Going 14 for 14. A lot of people know that's somebody I've picked as a dark horse candidate for the MVP if he continues to perform at a high level and his team puts it together. The Eagles will play the Chiefs this weekend. So obviously there was a lot of people in Philadelphia keeping their eye on YouTube TV Friday night. Meanwhile, a couple –
just put the damn game on cable. Stop messing with people.
I'll tell you what, man. YouTube TV might be the way to go. Like my cousin subscribes. It's I think 60, maybe 70 bucks a month. I know there's still certain things you can't get. Like, I know a lot of baseball people were like fired up because I think it was 2 years ago the MLB had an issue with YouTube TV, but the NFL obviously is continuing to go in that direction in terms of streaming with YouTube TV, Netflix, Amazon Prime, and things of that nature. But the Chargers take one from the Chiefs to start the race in what looks like is going to be a fun AFC West. The Broncos get by the young Tennessee Titans on Sunday. The Raiders go to Foxborough and beat the Patriots for Pete Carroll's first win as their head coach. Before we get to the other two primetime games, biggest thing that I took away from this past weekend was that, look, the AFC West is going to be a really fun division. All four of those teams, and you know, I'm not overreacting to Kansas City. As I've said it before, this may be their worst roster on paper that they've had in the Andy Reid era, that they've had in their dynasty era, so to speak. But as you know, I look at it no different than Belichick and Brady. As long as those two are there, you can't count them out. The Chargers are a team that they're talented. If they can put it together and if they can stay healthy, they're just as good as anybody. The Broncos need Bo Nix to take a step forward in year two, but that is a Super Bowl caliber defense. Sean Payton knows what it takes to win. And then what's up?
And then
you have the Raiders who, let's face it, there's a lot of young talent there. There are some studs in Brock Bowers, Max Crosby. You know, Ashton Gentry is a front runner for Rookie of the Year. But it's going to be about what they can get out of Geno Smith these last 2 years, as I think he's on his victory lap. But you have Pete Carroll as your head coach. Chip Kelly is your offensive coordinator. Those are two. That's a pretty good duo in and of itself. So they're going to be competitive. And I think that was the bottom line this weekend. All four of those teams showed that they're going to be in the fight. Meanwhile, I go to the Meadowlands. I look at Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. I'll tell you what, if that offensive line can give him time, he's still got it. Maybe not to the level that he once was, but for 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers, he still looks pretty good. That offensive line just needs to continue to give him time. And you know, the Jets didn't look too bad either in Aaron Glenn's debut. That was a pretty fun matchup from the 1 o'clock slate. But Gavin, give me some of your thoughts.
Well, to piggyback off you said, listen, I thought the AFC West is going to be arguably the best, most fun division. I'm not going to say best because I still want to see what a year two of Bo Nix looks like, and I want to see what a year one in Pete Carroll's start looks like. But look, the Chiefs are – it's going to be a dogfight. You're not the – you out of respect because of who you are, but we had to acknowledge you. But I don't think you're the best one in your division going into it this year, even healthy or not. Healthy. Listen, this may not be the best Chiefs roster, but as long as you got Mahomes on the center, it's going to be competitive. But I don't know. I just think that the guys around, you know, in that division just got ultimately better. Down to that, the Steelers and Jets game, I thought Justin Fields looked phenomenal. I thought he did what he needed to do, except for the end. I thought that against a stingy Steelers defense, which doesn't give up much, which he fared well. He had two rushing touchdowns on the ground, first in his career. I thought that Garrett Wilson looked like that. Listen, that's a duo that need to be revived. The Fields and Wilson duo is going to be nice. I think Breece Hall claims the number one running back spot. I'm interested to see who wide receiver number two is going to be for the Jets. You can't throw to one person all the time. That's the simple.
No, totally. They need optionality in the passing game. You know, especially if you want to survive in the AFC East. Speaking of AFC East, a team that did not look good this weekend was the Miami Dolphins. They got annihilated.
Well, hold on. No. We're not going. Let's just call it what it is. The offense does not believe in number one.
They don't.
The offensive line, there was a play, and Harrison pointed this out. He pointed out that the offensive line just gave up on that play. They do not care for that man. And I'm not saying that that's for sure it is, but from like some of those blocking mishaps that are happening, just look like a will issue. Look like now.
Nah, I totally agree.
I think Tua Tagovailoa's regime or time is done in Miami, but it's because that contract he has, how can you move him? And I think Mike McDaniel, unfortunately, I'm a big Mike McDaniel guy. His offense has been figured out for the last couple years now, and I think is at the point where your number one wide receiver is getting older and his off-the-field issues are starting to become a question mark. Jalen Waddle has not stepped up into the consistent number two that you want him to have. Yep. You lost Johnny Smith for a guy in Darren Waller who's 2 years removed from dropping a horrible diss track about Kelce Plum and retiring and coming back and thinking he's going to do something. He didn't even make a cameo in week one. That's what this Dolphins is. Don't even get me started on the defense. I don't know what that was. But, Dom, I want to say one just to go back to the highlights or something. There is something I did see on Sunday. The AFC South, the NFC South. Those two teams, the Buccaneers and the Falcons. Michael Penix looked phenomenal in Game One. It was one boneheaded decision for them being 1-0. Simple. And it wasn't on his part. He did everything he was supposed to do to win. Bijan Robinson did everything he was supposed to do to win. That defense of the Falcons, it looked all right. But Mecca Ibuka also, too, was something to highlight. God, listen, the steal the fantasy draft, a lot of people were pissed I picked him in both leagues. Let me tell you, you have a guy that was in Marvin Harrison's shadows at Ohio State, who's arguably just a number one. He goes to the same situation. My comparison for this situation, Dom, is like the Philadelphia Eagles. Same thing with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith is a Heisman-winning wide receiver, right? And you have another guy who's just an overall freak athlete and number one. And number 11, A.J. Brown here in Philadelphia, it's like the same thing in Tampa. They have the same situation going on with Mike Evans. And arguably when Chris Godwin comes back, that's another person you got to be wary of. That Buccaneers offense, as long as Baker Mayfield plays well like he did last year, you say it best all the time, they're a matchup issue. I would like to see some things get worked out on the defensive side of the ball. They kind of looked a little lackadaisical in the secondary. I know they don't have as many people that used to have before, but I will say that game we saw week one, I wouldn't be surprised if later in the season, I don't have, you know, when they play again. Now, hopefully it's like at the more towards the end.
Yeah, it's
that's going to be the deciding factor right there. We saw it right there. In Tampa, it's going to be the deciding factor.
So you hit on a lot of good points with Tampa Bay. The one thing, and I've said it on air here before, that I really like about Emeka Ibuka is he's somebody that is a natural number two. You know, he was a number two in college behind, you know, with not only Marvin, but, you know, Jeremiah Smith. And he was Ohio State's all-time receptions leader in that capacity. So he's bought into the role. He's proved he could produce in that role.
It's a good role to be in.
Yeah, and a really loaded receiver room, by the way, out there in Columbus. And now he's, you know, he's in position to do the same thing in Tampa Bay. That's a really good offense. The question is, what come January, can that be a great offense? Because, look, we've seen Baker Mayfield play good postseason football before, but now can he take it up just one more level to get them over the hump?
I don't disagree with you, but that's where you have all those pieces around you.
100%.
To elevate you to that point. He doesn't have to – listen, we always go into argument. Does Hurts make the guys around him better, or does the guys around him make him better? And honestly, you can go 50-50. On Thursday, it looked like he made the guys around him better because he single-handedly kept them in the game and kept them going when they couldn't have answers in the passing game, which will be better this weekend. I'm just going to lay out there. I look at Baker Mayfield and I say, well, you have a Mike Evans, you have a Mecca Buka, you have a Bucky Irvin, you have a Rashard White, you have a Kate Otten, who will be back in the weeks to come.
Yep.
You have a great offensive line, not the best, but you have, you know, sir, you have arguably one of the best tacklers in the game, and Tristan Wirfs. You do not have to be the leader. You just have to do what Brock Purdy was behind that offense. Remember, Brock Purdy was surrounded by a CMC that could walk, and a Deebo Samuels that wasn't 40 pounds overweight, and a Brandon Ayuk that was motivated looking for a contract, and a George Kittle that actually was catching the ball more than blocking.
Yeah.
You don't have to be that guy out there. All you have to do is just make the right plays, don't turn with the ball, and give your playmakers the ball when needed to be, when asked to be. That's all you have to do. That's all he has to do. And we'll be talking about them in January.
Yeah, I've said it before. I think that's a dark horse for the NFC. They're not better than Philadelphia. They're not better than Detroit. They're not better than Washington in terms of talent, correct? But they present matchup problems for each of those teams. You know, they're not. Listen, the Eagles are are more talented than them, head and shoulders above. But they struggle. They struggle mightily with the Bucs, you know. Detroit, they gave them a game 2 years ago. Washington, they have the experience factor over in some spots. So
are we overrating Detroit just a little bit? I think of those two offenses.
I think a lot of people are. I don't think based off our conversations, Gab, that you and I are.
No, we're not.
You know, and I put it in the group this past Sunday, and James really liked the point of this is the 2023 Eagles.
No,
because you return a lot of guys from, you know, your most successful team, but that you also you lost both coordinators, and we saw what the Eagles looked like when Nick Sirianni lost Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon. We saw what Jalen Hurts looked like. We saw the issues that the defense had, and I think Dan Campbell's a very good coach. He's been the best coach Detroit's had in the last 30 years by far.
I saw Jim Caldwell here.
I mean, he's the only one to take him to an NFC championship.
Yeah.
I would, and listen, I like Jim Caldwell, but I think, I think Jim Caldwell had less to work with to an extent.
I mean, he had a Matt Stafford and Calvin Johnson. That's pretty much.
They didn't have Calvin Johnson for long either.
They didn't.
You know, that was kind of the end of Megatron. But, you know, he loses two very good coordinators. He loses Ben Johnson, whose offense looked in Chicago looked pretty good on Monday night, and he loses Aaron Glenn to the Jets. They looked decent on Sunday, so I think they're going to take a step back because of that. That's a lot of turnover to overcome, and I know a lot of fans don't think about that, but that's hard to overcome.
Look what happened to him on Sunday. You couldn't. They only had what, 10 points? 6 points.
Yeah, 10 points.
Offensive, You know what doesn't get talked about? We talk about losing both coordinators and returning a lot of players. They lost Frank Ragnow in the middle.
Yeah, that was a big loss for them.
That was a big loss, and that doesn't get talked. Listen, I don't care if you have Peninsula. I don't care where we are on the line. If your center cannot generate a good block or anything, Jahmyr Gibbs is going to have a hard time running through the middle. And that's where a lot of his explosive plays come from. It's going from north, south, not east, west. So Detroit takes a step back. So in the grand scheme of things, I give the edge to the Buccaneers offense just a little bit. Just a little bit.
I would. I mean, looking at it the way I do, I would as well. I'm just trying to think about how most people are thinking here. You know,
well, because you're gonna think of the record. You know, common people.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Now, you know, onto the rest of the NFC North. I mean, the Packers looked really good on Sunday. You know, Michael Parsons hasn't missed a beat, made a statement in his debut. That Vikings Bears game on Monday night was fun.
I will say I'm still not sold on JJ McCarthy. Even though
he's gonna go through growing pains. I agree with that. He's gonna go through growing pains. But the biggest thing I looked at him on Monday night was his response. Okay, he looked bad early. He looked bad early. Pat, I remember Pat in the group, BAD in all caps. Totally agree. But then he responded. He responded. Now I'll say this. I think his coach helps him a lot. You know, I think Kevin O'Connell is very much in the same boat of a Sean McVay, where he does a lot of the stuff pre-snap. You know, he's making a lot of the adjustments beforehand at the line. And listen, you have Justin Jefferson to work with. You have Hockenson.
Jordan Addison back.
Yeah, Jordan Addison's back.
And back again.
Yeah, exactly. You have a solid running game that you can build play action off of, which McCarthy's pretty good in. So it's a favorable situation. In terms of him on an individual level, I agree with you. Yeah, I'm not that I think the guy's going to be a bust, but I'm not necessarily sold on him being the guy just because. Listen. He's going to face a lot of good defenses early. Yeah. So you're going to see growing pains.
And listen, my judgment's actually going to be on the other side of the field. Listen, number 18, I don't, Caleb Williams, he's been getting a pass. We gave him a pass through college. We gave him no more. You got an offensive coordinator that knows what he's doing as your head coach now. Who turned Jared Goff into what he is now. Because let's be realistic. We were not talking about Jared Goff like how we should be talking about Jared Goff.
Yes.
Because of him. Sam Laporta. Because of him. Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jahmyr Gibbs. They're awesome. We understand that. Look how they looked on Sunday without him.
Yeah, 100%.
There should be no reason that Caleb Williams with a DJ Moore and with a Roma Dunze, with a Colson Loveland, with a somewhat revamped offensive line and a DeAndre Swift, you should be blown a lead to a guy that just started.
Yeah.
No chance. I understand you don't play defense. I know there's defense collapse as well, but you were up. You had points and you stopped scoring.
Yeah, that's a good it's a good learning lesson.
I have a hot take. The best quarterback to come out of that draft class is gonna be Penix.
I think so. I think it's him and JD.
JD won because they already come. But I think just
– I wouldn't necessarily rule that for sure, though. I mean, listen, Penix, to your point, I think Penix was underrated coming out. You know, it was the final year – and I'm saying that from an NFL fan standpoint. From a college standpoint, he got his just due, okay? But he – you know, he played in the final year of the Pac-12. A lot of people weren't necessarily paying attention. And you know, there is something to be said about these guys that play out on the West Coast. They're playing all those late games. He had a darn good last year at Washington. Won the national championship. Yeah, won the Maxwell Award. I believe he was the O'Brien winner. I could be wrong. But, you know, I think that there's a solid case to be made for Penix being the guy coming out of that class. And, you know, unlike Jaden Daniels, who I really like, he had time to sit behind Kirk Cousins and learn. So even though I really consider this his rookie year, he's a lot more seasoned coming in, whereas Jaden Daniels was thrown into the fire. So I don't think that's a far-fetched, take there.
It's just going to be interesting to see. I know it was one large sample size out of small sample size before from Penix, but if you can go toe-to-toe with that Bucks defense against that head coach, you're going to be worth some.
100%. The game of the week, however, for me, and maybe you'll disagree with me on this, but I don't think you will. It was Sunday night up in Orchard Park. The Bills rally back to beat a team that we both expect to make a run for the Super Bowl. Not that I don't expect the Bills to either, but in Baltimore, I'll say this: I know a lot of people are on those guys for the late collapse, but both those teams looked really good. It was a tale of two halves.
Well, listen, that was defensively there wasn't much to be shown, yeah. But that's okay. I'm gonna take it a different way. Although the Bills won the game, the better team was Baltimore for four quarters all the way up until the end. Lamar Jackson did not commit a turnover, to my knowledge. Zay Flowers had two touchdowns on 140 catches, 140
yeah.
yards.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry looked all world. To your point, that's the rush leader this year. I don't know if I agree wholeheartedly, but I'm starting by stating it. Listen, I don't buy any week one overhype and all this. I don't think the Bills are as good as a football team. Just because you may have won the war, but you guys got your asses handed to you for four quarters. You cannot stop that offense at all. It's just you just have the former MVP on the other side on your side going toe to toe with another MVP who arguably could have said winner last year too. So now I'll say this, right? Buffalo won a close game, but did Buffalo really win the game at all? That's what I'm asking Bills fans today. That's what I'm generally asking. I'm not raining on no parade. I'm just being honest. You know, Dom, you know where I come from. I come from an honest point of view. I saw the team, kind of the same thing you can say about the Buccaneers and the Steelers. I saw teams that got lucky at the end because you had the ball when you needed it the most. But if the other side had the ball, you was not stopping them. Maybe the Steelers even were stopping the Jets because they were. But in the other two situations, you wasn't stopping Michael Penix going down the field. They went down the field earlier. Boneheaded decision at the end of the game, let you guys get a field goal. And also, we're not going to touch on how Young Hoku missed and McLaughlin missed as well. In this Bills game, right, Lamar was unstoppable. Everybody around was unstoppable. The defense of the Bills, non-existent. You couldn't find him. You had two guys in their respective position groups go for over 100 yards on you, and the quarterback did his own as well. DeAndre Hopkins turned back the clock with a crazy performance as well. Now, I'm going to say this. Buffalo may be 1-0, but the Ravens are really 1-0, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think both those teams are really good. I don't know, and this is where I don't get the common fan. I don't get how anybody walks away and kind of dumps on either of those teams after the game that was played Sunday night. The Ravens, the Ravens put one in the clunker and blew a significant double-digit lead. So, yeah, I get that. But I mean,
the common fan would just be pissed that your team lost, that's all.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But, I mean, to me, both of those teams looked like they're Super Bowl-caliber winning teams, which they've both been. I just think, they've gotten overshadowed in the AFC by Kansas City, in part because neither of them have been able to get past Kansas City. But that was a really fun game to watch. I'll tell you what. If there's a year to bet on Baltimore, I would say it's this year. I think this is the best team John's had in a long time. You have two guys that are MVP candidates. You have two guys that are, in my opinion, bona fide defensive player of the year candidates, and Kyle Hamilton. And you know what? I say Marlon Humphrey's also a dark horse. I think he has a great. I mean, he's solid, but I think this year he plays above what he's been. So who knows? But as we move to week two. We got a lot of fun stuff planned. I'll be in studio with you on Friday, barring some natural disaster or act of God or earthquake or I don't know.
You got hired.
Where?
He'll be there.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there. I may not be the happiest guy in the world, but I'll be there.
Before we move forward, though, I do want to enlighten people, because we will touch on this more in a little bit of an open forum on Friday. But for the pod listeners who might not be able to make it, guys, the Fantasy Football League's Week 1.
Oh, I was going to get to that.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to get to that next, actually.
Oh, my bad.
But no, you're all good, man. You're all good. See, it's Week 2 for us as well. So we're still figuring some stuff out. But
nah, man, we have too many episodes in the week.
But yeah, I'll be in studio with Gavin on Friday. We will also have a post game show Sunday night for the Eagles Chiefs post game, and I'm sure we'll also touch on some more Eagles stuff on Friday, including Jalen Carter avoiding a suspension and just getting a $57,000 fine. But yes, on to fantasy football. Gavin, how did you feel about your team in Week 1? Let's start, because we have a member of the league on, or two members of the league on the air. Let's get some perspective here.
Well, I felt great. Listen, the YNs had a meeting right before the 1 o'clock kickoffs, and we said nothing but perfection. And if you saw the boys in blue, run. No, it's like nah. But we came out, we conquered. I'll be honest, James had the upper hand, and Lamar Jackson. I think this is the first time everybody on my team in both my respective leagues, in my other league, Dom, we all scored over double-digit points, and the quarterback led the way. But I felt great. I felt great going into Week 1. I got BTAU, Trent Week 2. And, Dom, you want to know something funny about that one? It's a family rivalry. I get to play him. I'll play him a mixture of 8 times this year, considering our other league as well. So, I want to get one up before we play any other one.
There you go. But yeah, on to the Week 1 scores. Gavin defeated James, which is, hold on, I'm pulling it back up.
Defeat is a nice word, by the way.
What?
Defeat, you're being nice. Defeat is nice. Zaz beating.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, I'm sorry. Wow, yeah. I didn't realize the score was that big. So the YNs, which is Gavin, defeats James's finest team, 122-95. So, Gavin, you are off to a 1-0 start. Not a lot of close games this past weekend. Control-Alt-Defeat.
Highest score, too, by the way.
Yes, at 140, beats Beth's brilliant team, 140-99. I think that had to be the largest margin of victory this weekend.
Outside of, I think, between me and her, largest margin, holding our opponents but underneath 100 points, I believe. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there was one close game this weekend. The Chosen One, Dewan, beats Lynn's Lao team, 103.64 to 102.12.
I do have comments from the Chosen One. He said it shouldn't have been that close.
Well, he got the win.
He's like, I can't lose her to start of the year. He's like, I can't do that.
I respect it, but I mean, I'm sitting here 0-1. We'll get to me in a sec. But the Sandlot squad, somebody in my household got a win. My dad beats BTAU, our good friend of the program, Trent, 109-97. Speaking of other people in the program, Hakuna Maialata, in big part due to Josh Allen, beats Locker Room Buzz CJ Tully, 129-101. I was looking at that game early, and CJ was up pretty good. And yeah, Josh Allen in fantasy. I don't think I need to say much more.
It was Pat's birthday win.
Yeah, it was. That's a good point. And then finally, the Diddler, Harrison Nash, beat Junction Boys, which is my team, 110-92. I didn't manage my lineup well. Harrison's got a pretty good team. So, to be honest, I wasn't too surprised.
Per sources close to the individual, he said that's a Diddy. Any win is you got invited to one of the freak out party. Any loss, wow. you receive. Any loss you receive is an invitation to the party. So that I guess you're the first one.
Yeah, that's a loss in and of itself.
But it's an honor. Had you first one. How do you feel about your team's performance?
I don't feel great.
92 points. I want to say maybe the lowest of everybody this week. It is actually.
Yeah, I don't feel great, but also too, I might, depending on how I feel like midway through Sunday, I might just tank this year.
Tanking or after week two is wild.
But I've done it before, especially if this is going to be an annual thing. So I'm not opposed to that. But I'll see. We'll see where it goes. We will get to the week two fantasy schedule on Friday. But now let's pivot a little bit. Let's go on to baseball, where the Phillies. Red October is approaching. I'm heading down to the ballpark tonight.
I gotta get one more game before the school is up.
Wait, did I miss anybody?
No. I'm talking about baseball. I'm trying to get down.
Okay.
No, you got
definitely.
I gotta get one more. Go ahead.
Definitely, but the Phillies are we're close to Red October, and I'm heading down there tonight to see them. Hopefully, take this series from the Mets. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I forget the whole deal with the magic number. I haven't done that there. But they're what, 8 games up on the Mets?
I believe so. Let me Google it.
Yeah. So the countdown to Red October has begun. Kyle Schwarber hits his 50th home run last night.
9, actually.
9, okay. I stand corrected. Thank you. Kyle Schwarber hits his 50th homer last night. Gavin, talk to the people. This guy needs to be the National League MVP.
Hold on, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. But this guy, and you know I usually don't get likes.
And go for it.
If they give it to Shohei, I understand. I never pull that. I never pull that card. But
can I say why though?
Go ahead.
Because listen, I most valuable player, right? And I hate because I'm a Shohei Ohtani fan. Listen, my favorite player is Mookie Betts. So that means I'm subjected to watch, the Dodgers at times. And I watch well, it's so crazy. I'm not really like a Dodgers fan or any short like shape form or anything like that. But Shohei Ohtani is not the best player this year. He's not. Between injuries, listen, the man plays both sides of the plate. He pitches and he throws, right? So if you're not doing the one half of your job, how are we going to consider you the MVP? Now, I understand we give that award to something different, but it's part of, like, because that's for pitchers. I understand the Cy Young, but Kyle Schwarber has been the most consistent throughout the whole year, and Shohei Ohtani has missed time due to injuries and games and stuff. So I don't understand how we sit here and say that he's the MVP. If he wins, I'm not going to be mad about it, but I'm not making a homer's point or case, but this is just got momentum behind it. I look at if Shohei Ohtani wins this, Dom, it comes off as a name award, and now we have to have a bigger conversation about it, because that's not the best player to me. That I don't know about to others, but in my personal opinion, I don't think so.
Yeah, listen, I believe that that Schwarber's clearly deserving of the MVP. I think it is him, because if you take him off of this team in June and part of July, even go back to a little bit in May. This division race is much closer. At the same time, I can't get mad at giving it to Shohei, because I look at it from this lens. It's one of these things now where he's going to be that guy where you could probably give it to him every year.
That's fair.
But at the same time too, you look at the standings, the Phillies are ahead of the Dodgers in the seeding race. So I think there's a lot to be said for that as well when it comes to the case for Kyle Schwarber. But just from a team standpoint, Gab, how are you feeling about the Phillies heading into another postseason?
Well, listen, I like
2.5 weeks left in the regular season.
Well, I like how the bullpen is. I think going out and getting Duran was the best move that you could make at that time. what was one big issue we had with the Phillies at the end of every year, at the end of every game, was can you close games? And now you actually have a closer who does his job. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dom, you follow closer than I do. It hasn't really blown too many saves since he's been
here. No, he hasn't. You know, he brings a different level of energy to the team.
He brings fun.
He does.
He brings fun. Like, his entrance, right, and not to go on a tangent, but his entrance, it's kind of like, oh, shit, he's coming.
It is. Now, personally, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but
you don't like him, dude. You don't like all that stuff, do you?
I don't think he's earned it.
You don't think he's earned it?
Listen, I think he's a very good player, but I also think it's one of these things where I look at it like the headband in basketball. You gotta earn the right to wear it. But you know, listen, he's a guy that pitches off of, you know, you could tell that he comes to the mound with he arrives on the mound with a certain amount of energy. It's fun to watch, don't get me wrong. Like, from an entertainment standpoint, it's awesome. But
I gotta get to a game to see that live, though. I got to.
But from like a respect and a listen, he's a closer, he's not a starter. So it's like, yeah, you're only going to see him when he's up. It's not like you see him every single night. So, yeah, I do see some flaws in my point. And probably all the Phillies fans that follow us on social media are probably like, yeah, you're ruining the fun. I really don't care. And by the way, I actually worked in baseball for a year. So, yeah.
I will say, though, that's something that, like, the ninth inning, right? When that entrance hits, when he comes out, you do all the lights and the music and the electric scoreboard, right? It's supposed to set the tone of it ends here. Excuse me. And to your point about he hasn't earned it, I slightly disagree, only because if he was blowing more saves than completing them, right? I would be like, you know what, you're right, he hasn't earned it. But the man has been as advertised since he's gotten here, better than what we, let's be honest, and there's no dig to, you know, Mr. Steroid Alvarado. It's kind of better than what we had.
He's a very good arm. Like, I'm not disputing that. To me, the guys that earn those type of intros are your Mariano Rivera's, your Jonathan Papelbon's, your guys like that. I don't put him up there. I liked him in Minnesota. He's, you know, I'm not saying like, oh, he, but you know, to me, like a generational closer earns that type of,
really see too many generations because everybody just closes by committee. So when
absolutely.
We get to label one guy out is good, but to answer your thing about the whole team as a whole, listen, my hopes as this October is just as high as, you know, my love life. And, you know, it's we get to it goes on the rise, and then you're like, oh damn, it's the same thing. Listen, what I'm trying to say is if anyone close to me understands why, Dom, you know exactly why. But I look at it as you're only as good as your bats go.
Yeah, 100%.
Last year you saw that. I think in the World Series run year, no one was expecting it. And that's what I said, the worst thing that ever happened to the Phillies was your first entry to the playoffs was going to the World Series. That was the worst thing that happened, because now anything short of that is a failure. Yeah, when I grew up, Dom, when I grew up as a kid, where the damn team wouldn't win no more than 40 games. So to me, the fact that we even talk about October and we get something to get excited for, I don't care how it ends. Now, that was me before. Now, I kind of do care, because last year was an embarrassment. You got showed up and showed out by your own division rivals, and you did not look like you were ready. You need to be better this year, and it starts with the bats. I look at the bats this year, and I said, well, who's that different? Okay, well, you add Max Kepler. He's cool, but that's not – Harrison Bader's great. You know, that home run was magnificent until the lady tried to take it from the damn kid and asshole of the year, by the way. Can we just real quick? I want to say this for radio, but I have to say this here, Dom. You and I go to a lot of baseball games. There is an unwritten rule about baseball. And you know what the one unwritten rule is I don't think no one talks about? And if I'm wrong at any point, please stop me. If a home run is hit, right, the person who's reaching for it, right, Yeah. That means a little, let's say it's a cluster of hands. But in this instance, I'm not going to do it because it was Miami and there wasn't many people there. If it hits off your hand, you have one real attempt to catch it. Right down, you have one real attempt to catch it. And if it hits off your hand, it is now fair game to everybody in that section, in that row, right?
Yeah.
All right. The audacity, right? Because there's also a situation where if it lands right in front of you, right, in a different row, that gentleman did not walk over anybody, trample anybody to get to the ball. He had the right to make a play on that ball. By that chance, that ball already hit the ground, already hit the seats. It is now on. It is a live ball. We'll use football terms. A live ball. For you to take your privileged ass to walk over there and to ruin a nice moment, you gotta be some sort of asshole. You have to be. And Dom, I will say credit to both teams for getting it right on Marlon's part and for the Phillies part. Probably will see him throwing that first pitch sometime soon in October, I best believe. But
I think that would be stupid.
And what, if he throws out the first pitch?
I think it would be. See, and this is a conversation for another day about
it. It is.
Phillies, but to me, like, number one, like, I think everybody's – the fact that everybody's still talking about it is, like, ridiculous. Like,
I just think because how in the face it was.
You know, listen, it was horrible. But, I mean, look, the organizations took care of it.
Anything trying to find who the lady is and try to get her fired, that's a little too much.
I mean, look, I don't care for that. I mean,
you know, no, but I'm just saying, but like that's where, like,
yeah, I don't disagree.
That's a little out there.
I don't disagree. But my thing is, listen, this was it's one incident in the stands in Marlins ballpark, by the way. You know, but like let's move on here. Let's get back to baseball. But Trey Turner is currently day to day with hamstring issue. So it looks like he's going to be shut down for the remainder of the regular season, which I'm in agreement with. Like, let's not risk anything else. You know, he's also been, he was an all-star snub. You know, you're going to need him in October. So you don't want to go down Wheeler and him this postseason. So I think they're doing the right thing there. But listen, Edmundo Sosa is clearly reliable. He's a guy that I wish they would find more ways to get him into the lineup.
They should move him from Stockton.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed. I'm not opposed.
Yeah. It's time to break this. Listen, I'm going to say something really unpopular. And if we had our third member here, he would lose his shit. I'm about to say. You want to know why I really don't like the Phillies? Like, I'm not like a diehard guy. Oh, the daycare. You can't break him up. Oh,
Bo. I don't think he would disagree with that, though.
No, but he probably wouldn't. But, like, but that's the issue. There's people that are like, this team is too nice. This damn team is too nice. This damn team doesn't have no flavor to it. Doesn't have no pop to it.
Yeah.
Dominant. Ultimate to it. You want to know what I'm getting at? Not enough that either. But at the same time, too, there are a group of guys on to a point. Like, I don't, like, they're all, no one gets on anybody in that clubhouse. If you suck, you suck. And no one's going, and you're not going to be like, instead of someone like, hey, man, I need you to be better, going to be like, it's okay. Maybe tomorrow will be your day. That's why I don't like this, because the fan base enables it. Don't get rid of Brandon Marsh, because I like Marsh. Don't get rid of Stott, because we like Stott, and Stott is handsome. I don't care. If he can't swing the damn bat, he means nothing to me. If you cannot fulfill what you're here to do, which is, and I'm just picking on Stott because this is part of the order we always talk about. If you cannot fulfill what you're brought here to do, I don't care. I don't care. We were talking about JT Realmuto last year kind of declining, taking a step back a little bit going this year. I don't care. I don't care what he used to do. If you are not adding wins to my team, it doesn't matter. Sentimental bullshit matters. It does not matter here.
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't. And you know, I in principle, I 100% agree with you on that. However, I'll say this, and you know, I'm 28 years old now. the my lifetime of Phillies baseball is, I mean, we're from the same generation, Gav. But my lifetime of Phillies baseball is slightly different than yours, in my opinion. Like,
fair. Yeah.
Because you always tell me, like, the prime years of your childhood watching the Phillies was
– I caught the last year Ryan Howard and everybody.
You're talking 2012 to 2016.
Yeah, like 2000.
Yeah, so they were bad. Yeah, that was the end of that group, and that was just a lot of bad baseball. Whereas for me, that time frame for you – for my childhood, the end of elementary school through middle school for me was 2000. You know, I remember 2007 very well. I remember that whole 2007 to 2011 run. And I'll say this: those were really fun teams to watch, and they were must see TV every night. Like, you know, they. Outside of the Red Sox, I think they had the second longest sellout streak. It was hard. I remember it was hard to get tickets. But I'll say this with this group, okay? The persona, and I'll say this as well, social media does play a role into this. Social media was not what it was in 2007 to 2011 to what it is now sitting here in 2025. There is such a love affair between – As much as people have grown frustrated with this group, people forget that there's been such a love affair between this team and the town. And I don't think we had that with that other group, other than the fact that they won.
Outside of winning, I mean, some of those guys are like damn near local.
No, that's a big difference. Like I said, now, yeah. You know, you get to see a little more, and like I said, the personalities of the guys are different. And I'm not saying that other group, you know, listen, they brought this town its first championship in almost a quarter century. They're always going to be remembered for that. But I'll say this, we didn't know those guys as people like we see Bryce Harper and Nick and Liam Castellanos and Kyle, you know, Kyle Schwarber's got his own, you know.
Kyle Schwarber's the Wawa.
You know, there's so this town has really gotten to know this group on like a personal level where it's like, yeah, you know what? As much as these guys frustrate me, I love them. You know, yeah, Brandon Marsh, you know, is streaky. Bryson Stott hasn't been good, but you know what? As guys, we love them. And there's just that element to it. So I don't disagree with you, but like I understand the whole daycare lot, you know, of why people are so tied to these guys, to the daycare guys, and to, you know, some of these other guys that aren't Bryce Harper or Kyle Schwarber. It's because we've gotten to know them. And listen, if they don't get it done this October, which I think there's a good chance that they don't, it's going to be hard. Some of those hard decisions are going to hit the fan base real hard. And listen, you know me, I don't think that should matter, but I get it. I do.
See, and the issue is, and I normally agree that it does kind of matter, but in this one, the reason why they're still here is because of the fans.
Well, and listen, the Phillies are an organization that we do care about what our fans think.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but like I look at it as like, it's time to go. It's done. Like it's like the whole. Okay, for another example, "Dancing on My Own" must be the worst song in history. Not even just a song itself. Just like the lore behind it. The one thing I liked about the Eagles, right, was their song kind of had like some, you know what I mean, the Phillies give off like fucking frat boys. They all play baseball and they all drink and they have fun and they all, you know, like. I want them like, yo, and this could be just a cultural thing. This could be just me now. I don't want my fight song or my rally song at the playoffs to be something that everybody can dance to. I want it to be something like, all right, remember when Dreams and Nightmares for the Eagles? When Dreams and Nightmares came on for the Eagles in 2017, people were running their head. Like, you already know what time it was. Yeah. I know this is probably like the media side of me, the music side of me speaking here. Music sets the tone. That locker room gives off frat boys. There's not a single asshole in that locker room. And Bryce is just a fake-ass tough guy. I'm sorry. You're just
I'll say this. A baseball clubhouse and a football locker room are two different things.
They're two different things.
Totally different things.
But but that fake ass tough guy, no, I'm not vibing with that no more. I'm not. Because if you were really about it, and I'm not calling Bryce Harper Saul, but I'm saying if you were really about half the things you say, you would stand on them a little bit more, right? Look at
that. I'll disagree.
And there's some players that we know are assholes, and they let you know about it too. I'm not saying you gotta come out and be like that. Aaron Rodgers is a prime example. He doesn't come out everyone and say I'm an asshole, and I want you to know about. People just automatically think that about you the moment you open your mouth on McAfee. We need some YNs in that baseball clubhouse. We need some real YNs.
I think the Phillies have two buddies. This is an interesting conversation. I think the Phillies have, I think they kind of, when it comes to their culture, they've made their bed and they're laying in it. And listen, I'll say this. There's some organizations where positive cultures really do wonders, but there's also organizations where the culture is not great and it also does wonders. Case in point, the Houston Astros. This group is at a crossroads. We'll obviously get more in depth as the playoffs get here. Gab, you know me right now. I'm 100% in football mode, so I apologize to our baseball listeners.
There's a guy that's working right now. They got them covered.
Yeah, I mean, listen. I'll be all locked in, but I'm 100%. Once the calendar flipped to the end of August, you know what type of time I was on. So, I'm not invested night in, night out right now, but I'll say this, this is going to be a one way or another. This is going to be a postseason we're always going to remember, because if they do it, great. But if they don't do it,
blow it up.
There's going to be decisions that have to be made about this group. And, it's going to be tough to see some of these guys go. To me, business is business, but I get it.
Real quick before we move on from baseball, give me your way too early World Series predictions and your word too early. And I mean, I guess NL MVP, you're rocking with Schwarber, so I'm not going to ask that one.
Yeah, I'm going to rock with Schwarber for my NL MVP. AL MVP, I'm a big Cal Raleigh guy. I'm a big fan of Cal, man. I'm a big fan of Cal. I like what the Mariners have done this year, but I could see them. I could see them giving it to Aaron Judge again. And he's another one. It's hard not to give it to him. But if I have a vote, I'm going Cal Raleigh.
If I have a vote, listen, Dom. I guess it's the bias in me. All rise. Aaron Judge is going to be MVP again. Listen, it's hard to ignore what Kyle Rogers, but here's the only difference I would say. If there wasn't someone else that hit just as much home runs as he did too, it would be a different story. The only reason Aaron Judge's average is up this year.
Yeah.
That's the only difference is doing it. And look how that Yankees team looked like when he was not around. That's my resting case. The Mariners had a phenomenal season. It will be probably Mariners and Yankees at some point in the playoffs. They will have to face off, I would believe. But I'm going with Aaron Judge. I got to rock with Judge. Because even after all the moves they made, 99 still runs to show up there in New York. All rise.
In terms of my early World Series prediction,
just throw something.
I'm going to go with the Dodgers and the Tigers. I'm going to go Detroit and LA.
I'm going to go rematch of last year. I think the Yankees figure it out. I think all their offseason moves, I mean, not all their in-trade or in-season moves actually form and come together. I think when October hits, there's something about, Dom, you know me, there's something about that Bronx baseball weather and the late October at 8 o'clock night at Yankee Stadium with New York yelling right behind you with that New York roar and then the damn train that you can hear from the outside. Ain't nothing that's beat it. I'm going with the Yankees and Dodgers again.
Yeah, that was
really gonna be the bad nutrition.
That wouldn't surprise me either. It'll be a fun postseason as it always is. Baseball to me has the best playoffs. Every pitch matters. Everybody's on the edge of their seat from from the first inning on. So it's different. It's a different vibe. It's a different time of year. I always look forward to playoff baseball. But I'll tell you what, this is going to be an interesting one in Philadelphia. And listen, I'll say this: if they don't get it done this year, let's rethink this whole Red October culture thing. What is it really doing for these guys?
I'm not done with that just yet.
Listen, I
don't disagree with you, but you have to rebrand it. You have to come, like, this whole soft launch, Red October, fun guy, frat boy energy, that's just got to go. Before we do it with Red October, you kind of have to switch the vibe of it. You got to come out a little bit more meaner, right? When the Eagles play, like, down, for example, when the Eagles hit, and granted, I know we just said earlier, football locker rooms and baseball clubhouse are two totally different, but the one that's not different is the vibe of the city. You could control the temperature with the vibe of the city. The Eagles, when it comes February, when it comes January, right, the Eagles are in asshole energy mode in a way. Meaning, like,
well, yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
So I think before we do away with Red October, you might have to rebrand it Red October in the asshole energy mind frame of this is no more buddy, buddy. It's no, hey, your friend come over here and your friend comes over here and we gather on the campfire. No, this is straight belt the ass. You have to take every game personal. And I understand it's baseball, but there's teams out there that take disrespect.
No, I don't disagree.
And I feel like the Phillies is going to change. You have to, the Phillies is the only team that kind of goes against the vibe of the culture of the city. A little bit.
I disagree with that.
This is for a deeper conversation on Friday, but when I say a sense of your disconnect is the inner city part. That's the vibe and culture. You don't, they have it. Listen, anything. Anything outside of I'll give them a little bit of South Philly. Anything outside of South Philadelphia and them, I feel like the Phillies have them, but I'm talking like that other. You
got to look at the demographic, though.
I understand. I understand. But that's yeah, a, but that's
you're
the thing.
You're making complete sense. You're making total.
That's what I'm saying. Sense.
But the demographic of the Phillies fan base
is not going to reach. I understand.
Different than the Eagles fan base.
And the Eagles, but here's the thing, though. That's the energy you have to bring in situations like that.
I don't disagree.
When I say that you're missing culture, like you're like, I'm just saying, like, you got like the like, you got all South Jersey. I think South Jersey's represented pretty damn well for the Phillies.
The majority of the Phillies season ticket holders are South Jersey people. That's why they didn't go through the downtown ballpark.
So I think, like, also, too, I feel like, you know, the surrounding areas outside the city. But I'm talking about the inner city. I'm talking about where, like, the Eagles, but I'm talking where the Sixers pull from. You know, I'm talking about
what has that done for the Sixers?
You're right.
I don't disagree with you with the Eagles, but when it comes to the Sixers, like, what has that done for them?
Well, I'll answer that, not to get too, well, kind of leads into what we're going to talk about real quick. To answer that question for you, they have it, but your star doesn't embrace that mentality.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, what does it do?
I guess, but I'm just trying to say, like, the total energy shift. That's one thing. If the Phillies had a – because you if Bryce, okay, I'm gonna challenge this. If Bryce Harper wants to act like he's from here and embrace with you have to embrace that side of the city too. And none of you guys None of you guys have done that.
I disagree, but that's not their demographic.
It's not the demographic, but I think that's the demographic that you're missing.
I don't disagree that they're missing.
I know you know. I'm just saying, but for those who may not be understanding what I'm saying, I'm not making a black or white issue. I'm saying
not at all, but
the part of the city that they're not covering is the inner city, and there's where you kind of get that.
I don't disagree with you, but
got a lot of fake ass tough guys on this.
I don't disagree, but that's just not them at the end of the day.
And
we'd be having the same conversation if this was the Flyers, you know?
Of course.
The Eagles to me, look, it's an Eagles town.
Well, yeah,
So, and the NFL rule, there's very few NFL cities where they don't rule the town. And I've been in one or two of them, but.
You think the Braves are?
Huh?
You think the Braves run Atlanta?
Oh yeah, from a pro sports standpoint,
I've never been down there.
In the last year, I've been to two towns. You wouldn't know that they have an NFL team there. Atlanta, and Nashville.
I believe it.
Even though the Titans actually have a decent fan base, but down there it's orange, man. It's orange. Yeah. It's orange, and if you're specifically in Nashville, because Vandy's right there, they love Vandy as well. But but no, like yeah, with Atlanta, it's a Braves town. It's a Braves.
Oh no, of course.
They'll get behind the Falcons if they're doing well. But like the NFL in the South, not to make this a different conversation, it's kind of just something to do on Sundays. Like it's not a.
I believe it.
Like I was in Alabama for a decent chunk of this summer. I talked to a couple people down there. I mean, listen, again, I told you this joke, but it's funny. We're getting to it toward the end here. But like, there's people down there that don't know what the NBA is. I was sitting in a coffee shop wearing a 76ers shirt, and a woman comes up and like asks me, "What does that group represent?" Thinking it's like a political group, and I'm like, "No, it's a basketball team." She's like, "What college?" I'm like, "Not a college."
Her teeth was probably falling out. She had like.
But yeah, like you know, like listen.
My name was probably Cheryl.
Yeah, you get down to it. You get down there. It's from a pro sports standpoint. It's Atlanta Braves, and like I know people in Alabama where they'll just watch. If they're gonna watch the NFL, they're gonna watch wherever the Bama guys are playing. So they're gonna watch.
They're not watching the Boers ass.
Yeah, they're gonna watch. You know, they're gonna watch the Eagles. They're gonna watch Baltimore. They're gonna watch Miami.
Texas too. Dallas.
Houston. So
I think Cowboys run the state, but just other fans want to announce the Texans are better.
The Texans have a good little fan base.
That's the
league, and I'd be curious to talk to see what people down there think. When they took the Oilers from them and moved them to Tennessee, I think that was the shocker. And the timing was bad for bringing a team back, because as soon as they took the Oilers away, that's when the Rockets went to the finals. But anyway, that we got a little off topic there. As we wrap up here, Gav, on to the NBA. We are a couple weeks out from training camp. What?
3 weeks, Steph Curry.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Can't wait, man. You know basketball's my home. I cannot wait.
I'm really curious to see. And we're also, we're not far away from the NHL as well. We'll be sure to get a lot. We'll be sure to talk about those sports, because Gavin is a basketball guy. Pat is a hockey guy. I was in basketball heavy for 10 years in various capacities. So, I still have a lot of friends that do business in the sport. One of them we bring on as a recurring guest. He's going to be here with us in a couple weeks. And I'm really excited to have him back on, because he's got some really cool stuff to share with us. But I'll tell you what, if there's one thing I'm interested in heading into training camp one thing I'm anticipating with this NBA season is the ripple effect of the new TV deal. They are in a make or break situation. It's boom or bust. You're going to have national television every single night in some capacity, whether it's cable or streaming. It could either go really well, which the league needs it to, or it could be really bad, which the league does not need.
I think NBC has NBC and Amazon now? NBC,
yeah.
They have a lot riding on, because for people who don't understand, granted, Dom, I'm going to sound like a homer here. I was one of those TNT guys. I was an inside the NBA guy. They didn't take them off TV, but they're reshuffling around now. But that's some big issues to fill. And you added Jordan. I like the lineup. But the thing is, the line has sun is, but they got no chemistry. It's going to be like ESPN countdown all over again. I was going to say, to your point about make a break, I think so, because a lot of people are against streaming services hosting games now. And I think the NBA, for a sport that's having a hard time with viewership recently, making a game not easy to accessible is not going to grow the game. It's going to hurt the game. So we'll see. Let's see how quickly they'll go back to national television. But I think it's going to go well, but I think the difference is can you get the common fans to give more of a damn than fans like me, fans like you, some people that enjoy basketball for more than what it is? I don't know. I do not know.
Yeah, I agree. So I'll say this with NBC, and when we were on for draft draft night. I should have asked my dad about this. The move back to NBC, I think, is a good move because you're going to have that older generation that grew up watching the NBA on NBC on Sundays when it wasn't football season. You're going to have that group back, you know, for nostalgia purposes. You know, there were so many people our parents' age that grew up on that. So I think NBC could do well. The fact that they have Peacock brought in some really good people, like you said, they got a gel. But also, listen, there's a lot of people that haven't been happy that Thursday Night Football is completely gone on Amazon, but they still watch it. So we'll see.
I mean, people are always going to complain. Yeah, people's always gonna complain. I would say the one thing I'm looking forward to outside of just that deal, I'm looking forward to seeing the new faces. I'm looking forward to see Kevin Durant in a Rockets jersey and how that all goes, as he actually is the main guy there. He has some nice pieces around Sengun, Thompson, Fred VanVleet and company, and a great coach that Ime Udoka, who I'm very fond of, who I thought she never got fired because of personal business. Never understood that how personal business can cost you a job. But hey, look, here we are. I'm also looking forward to see a full year with LeBron and Luka. I'm also excited to see what the New York Knicks do after moving on from your head coach, and you kind of didn't really make a big splash in the coaching market. You kind of really stayed the same. I thought Mike Malone was going to get the job, not Mike Brown, but go for Mike Brown. I'm interested to see how Boston looks without with Tatum this year. I want to see how scary and fear. Let's see what Jaylen Brown could turn back the clock though, and what made him a $300 million man, because I don't think he is that guy anymore. I'm not calling JB Brett bad, but I think that knee injury that he suffered a year ago. He's not going to be able to take them over. I want to see how improved Donovan Mitchell and that Cleveland Cavaliers team goes, because they were the ones that got surprised by a team in – talk about the Pacers. What are the Pacers going to like? You don't have your Batman and your Robin went to Milwaukee. And finally, can Joel Embiid walk? I don't want to talk about the Sixers laid down. I'm asking someone of a good move. But that's also another thing is, what would a full healthy year of the sideshow speech last year? Dom, I do not believe that whatsoever. That's basically saying that, you're going to win a lottery tomorrow. It means absolutely positive nothing to me, because I want to see. I want to see the money in my bank account. I want to see you going to be that you play. And finally, I approach I'm taking this year's game, ladies and gentlemen, is I'm just going to enjoy. Granted, I have fandom, but I'm just going to enjoy. I look at our dinosaurs of the game, the people that I grew up on, Dom, are kind of getting to the near end. LeBron James, I know Chris Paul is calling it a year after this season. I know that Steph Curry's talking about 3 to 4 more years. Lord knows how long KD has. And also, too, we got to wait for Kyrie Irving. NBA just also a pivotal year for them, because not only are you trying to reach new fans, new audience, but you need the younger stars to actually start getting out and being well. You cannot always somewhat, I don't know if John Morant's playing this year or not, but John Morant has to somewhat emerge back to the guy we used to know him as. You need to start having these young guys start to pan out, because when this older generation's time's up, a lot of people are going to leave. Like the day when LeBron James retires, I know a lot of people are going to exit the game because of him. I know Steph Curry, Kevin Durant are still going to love Anthony Edwards. I kind of found my next favorite player. But so a lot of people, they don't have them. So this is also a pivotal year for building a new face. You guys have forced to be Wembanyama every year. Can you stop? I understand he's 7 foot from France. I understand he's a freakish athlete. But until the man plays a full healthy year and shows complete utter diamonds for which he showed a little bit of, don't want to see too much of Wembanyama like that. We also stopped forcing there to Zion Williamson. He's not like that anymore. He needs to get the hell out of New Orleans. But I'm going to save my best around for later. Dom, basketball's around the corner. Hockey's around the corner. NFL's in full swing. College football's in full swing. And you know this is in full swing. Unfortunately, the school season, you guys can catch on the radio this Friday from 10 to 12 on 917 WCUR. I have a lot of fun things planned. I hope you guys enjoy too. And be on the lookout, YouTube content coming soon. But that being said, I'm Gavin. That's Dom. We also got James Vias, whatever the hell he is, and Pat at work. They will be joining us when we can get them all back in again. James will be joining me on radio when his schedule permits. But until then, just to kick back, I'm Gavin. That's Dom. Sign out. Peace. And go Lions, baby. Let's go 2-0.